Members, have you had a chance to review the minutes from the last meeting? We can I'd entertain a motion to approve those.
So moved.
Representative Hilty has moved to approve the minutes of the last meeting. Anybody else have any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes of the date of January 26th Civil Law Committee, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The minutes are approved. I understand Representative Westrom is on his way. The weather, as we all know, has held a good number of us up today. But Mr. Hickey, if you are available, we can continue our testimony on Representative Westrom's bill. I did see him. I believe that Mr. Chair is coming. Huh? Okay, we can come back to Mr. Hickey. Mr. Raddatz? And members, I do understand that the MPCA, per Representative Hilty's suggestion last time, potentially I think even the DNR and maybe some other agencies are here today too, if we have questions of them on this bill later. Mr. Raddatz, if you would give your name and affiliation for the record, please, and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Chris Raddatz. I'm Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. And thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the opportunity to be here today. I just want to start out by saying that Farm Bureau is represented. We're organized in 78 county and regional farm bureaus across the state of Minnesota, and we represent nearly 30,000 members. And we're here today in support of House File 203. In the statement that you're getting a copy of, our public policy states that we support legislative review of new government agency rules and fees before they are implemented. We also support review and approval by the Committee of Origin of all governmental agency regulations and rules before they are implemented. we've had a long history of this, and going back when we were dealing with the feedlot permitting issues, it became pretty evident to us that there were going to be some pretty heavy costs associated with compliance. So in 2000, we had statute amended to address that. And I put the statute in my statement. It's statute 116.07. But basically what it says is that before a feedlot operator that has less than 300 animal units has to come in compliance, there has to be some cost share dollars available from the state to help cover those costs. $3,000 for 300 animal units, $10,000 for anything over 300 animal units. And this is, I think it's kind of unusual because proactively addressing the cost of agency rules doesn't happen very often. So we think passage of House File 203 would allow the legislature to get a look at the cost of the rules before they are implemented. And we want to thank Chairman Westrom for bringing the bill forward, and we urge passage. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Raddatz. Any questions? Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Raddatz. I know the existing law requires that there be $25,000 worth of cost to any one small business with 50 employees or less, and I'm wondering, under the existing law, where people can challenge regulations that they find burdensome, how many times have you challenged existing regulations using what's in statute now?
Mr. Raddatz?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hartman, as an organization, Farm Bureau, we have not used that provision to challenge.
Any other questions for the presenter? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Raddatz. And next on our list of Mr. Hickey, are you here?
I am.
Mr. Hickey, do you have any further testimony for the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I do.
Okay, Mr. Hickey, your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business. When we last left off, some people wanted some examples, so I have diligently gone off trying to find a few, and I just wanted to share them with you. Briefly, I think everybody, you know, here is well aware of, you know, as when we at last meeting when we discussed this broad delegation of power that's occurred to the executive branch and the hundreds upon hundreds of pages of rules and regulations we have. Here's one book. This is one that contains the PCA's rules, 1,800 pages. and we have 10 volumes of this. So, I mean, I hope everybody realizes that rulemaking has occurred in an extensive and sometimes expensive way, and we've, I know many of you are very familiar with that. But anyways, we do have a lot of rules in this state. I was trying to find some examples, trying to find recent ones that if we had this bill in place, possibly we would get a different result, or parties would have felt they had someone to turn to, such as you, to try to seek modifications to rules. But to start with, the hazardous waste rules of the 1980s are updated periodically, almost annually, by the PCA, and many of them can have cost impacts that could exceed $10,000 for a given party, depending on the size of their operation and the impact of it. We have the industrial stormwater rules that were just promulgated in 2010, which are going to be very expensive for a lot of businesses and going to cost a significant amount of complying with. Some businesses are going to have to build underground vaults to try to contain runaway runoff water. Some are going to have to test runoff water. Some are going to have to put a lot of equipment into storage buildings that they don't otherwise have. And the source I talked to this talked about it could be very expensive cost of complying on this particular one. From 2010, we have new medical waste incinerator rules coming out that could be expensive and concerning to veterinarians, dentists, hospitals, clinics. Obviously, we need to do these things, but people are out there trying to comply with them, don't always have the money, and these rules can come along at maybe not an opportune time for someone to have to put this kind of expense into trying to comply. We have the 08 septic system rules, which are fairly legendary. They've caused a lot of problems for a lot of people. It's volume 780 to 7083. One estimate from an expert in the field was $3,000 to $4,000 average compliance from a homeowner, significantly more expensive for a business. Cities and counties are having a problem with it. Eight counties have opted out of the rules, are not going to work with the PCA at this moment. And accepting the PCA money and trying to go forward. They're not going to do that at the moment. One expert in the field estimated that in the city of Oak Grove, he helped install a smaller shopping mall. The cost was $110,000. He estimated it would likely double easily under the 08 rules. And so the costs there are pretty significant. Looked a little bit at the Department of Labor and Industry. OSHA rules come online from time to time. Requiring safety guards, modifying equipment. Some of this might depend on the size of the business, but if you've got to put modifications on 50 pieces of machinery, that could get expensive. That could easily trigger $10,000. Maybe you don't even have to have anywhere near 50 pieces of large industrial equipment or any kind of equipment to modify to get to that threshold. But just many examples. I haven't had time to delve into it or have a study commission or a one-man research office on this, but just a few examples of the many rules and regulations that we have in these 10 volumes of books that can impact people.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Representative Mahoney has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hickey, you've been around here a couple of years or better. If this bill was to pass, you want us to go over environmental rules every year here? You want us to go over building code rules and changes? And they change regularly for updates of equipment or types of material used or anything else that is done by rulemaking for just a few thousand dollars. It does change the cost of doing business because if you go from, I don't have a good example, or medical waste. I mean, that's some of the stuff that's being incinerated is mercury and lead and other things that are floating up into the air. If it's not, as the filters come online, we can catch more and more. But you want us? I mean, I'm a pipe fitter. I have no clue on environment, except for what I read. Or medical waste. I can tell you about how the incinerator works. People complain about government being slow now. You know, this is a part-time job. I might have to be here all year long.
Mr. Hickey? Representative Westrom?
Representative Mahoney, I mean, that's a good point. One way to possibly deal with the requirements under this law would be do it by committee area. At least there's people who have some expertise in that area. They concentrate on that area. I don't know if Representative Westrom has thought that through, but I think possibly doing it by committee would be a way to do it, just as we dispense bills now, all the hundreds or thousands of bills, and try to do it by topic area, by committee. Hopefully there's people on there who feel they would be up for the task. But we really like the idea of the people with the election certificates having a final say in things that are expensive and burdensome to not only business, but this is, you look at the effect of these rules, this is city, county, individuals. Think it's a good idea.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, maybe just a follow-up, but maybe I'll, what if Mr. Representative Mahoney, if you want to follow up, I'll just...
No, go right ahead. You're the chair. I always like to defer to the chair.
Well, just to clarify, these are prospective rules. So the idea is to rein in regulatory delegated authority that I would submit, and many legislators submit, we pass too much off to agencies. I think we've all been in a situation, and in a heated meeting or town hall forum where people are mad about something, and we all say, well, that's the rules that were developed after we passed this law, and it's always kind of a easy way to couch or duck the issue, but it's also a frustrating way to have these maybe well-intentioned laws grow out of control, and many times we aren't aware of the costs. The livestock issues that were brought up 10 years ago by Chris Raddatz with the Farm Bureau, probably a classic example. I mean, there were medium and small-sized farmers all across the state that were saying, hold on here, I have all I can do to keep my manure spreader running and keep milk on the table for my kids to eat, and you're going to be imposing these kind of new rules on me. Life has existed without these rules prior to the creation of them. So the idea is, yeah, maybe it's the direction we intended and we want to go, but then the legislature should have that added protection for the citizens and the people we represent to ratify it after we realize it's going to cost over $10,000 to implement the rules. So that's the idea, but it's sure, there's going to be expertise areas, but there's areas like that now we all deal with. You're better trained at pipe fitting, and others are better trained at teaching and education in a classroom, and others in transportation, but we all then rest on our common sense and our other experience and trust of others to make our final decisions. That's the hopefully the intent behind this.
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, so Representative Westrom, so when I bring another code bill up on the House floor, you're not going to put your sport jacket on and stand up and tell me how wrong I am? But be that as it may, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into that. Following your logic, OSHA came a few years back with, I'm required to wear, I think it was about 12 years ago, I actually weighed the harness that I'm supposed to wear when I'm up in the air. It was about 45 pounds. They had to bring through a rules committee to change the material to drop that weight to about 20 pounds. That rulemaking authority, which required new harnesses for people, took about 6 to 9 months to get it done. I'm not sure you really want to start getting the understanding of the difference in tensile strength on a nylon strap for a harness. But certainly they did, and they went through that. And building codes, pipe fitting. Do you want to go through the heat, the preheat, the heat, and the post-heat of a weld that's going to carry high-pressure steam and start to understand that, or high-pressure anything and start to understand that? Because at pressures of 3 pounds or greater, you can blow a tank up. And it does truly figure, you truly have to understand the weld systems before you do it. I have enough trouble passing legislation about codes here and explaining to people. Not sure. Well, I think I certainly. Well, I think you're walking into an area that could get us a full-time job.
Representative Westrom.
Well, Representative Mahoney, as I said last week, this bill flew off the House floor and the Senate unanimously in 2003. I'll look at the record. I haven't memorized the 15 or so that voted no. Maybe you were one of those 15 in the House. You may have already supported this bill 7 years ago. I'm just saying it was a good idea then. We had a governor that vetoed it. I think it's a good idea still. And again, we're only talking prospective. The harness issue, if that was a rule that was already made, it wouldn't be covered. But if it's a new rule that we're requiring, that might be a great example of a cost that comes back to the legislature. And the legislature says, absolutely, that makes sense, because having people carry 25 pounds less is probably a sensible way. We aren't going to necessarily dissect nylon and everything it's made out of. Certain committees might get into those details, but we are going to dissect the cost that it's imposing upon whoever the party or person is that is regulated by that that new regulation. We're only talking new regulations here, so until that regulation or rule has gone through, life has existed all the years prior without that rule or regulation, and so we're saying when the new rules and regulations are going to be this expensive, we ought to take a second crack, because we delegate to the agencies to do their expertise in the rulemaking, but it makes sense to me that we then look back after they've done the expertise in the rulemaking and put it all together, what it's really going to cost, because we don't usually have a firm grip on the costs when we're passing statutes to ask agencies to impose or write new rules. And that's what this would do, is just give us a review process if they're going to be expensive.
Representative Mahoney, one last follow-up.
One last follow-up. Just, you know, I've been here 12 years. I must. If I was one of those that voted for it, I just want you to know I've gotten smarter in my old age.
Okay. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, just to clarify what is intended here, I presume that what is anticipated is that this review would result in rules not going forward. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any, we wouldn't be here. So, Mr. Hickey, if rules were promulgated that affected, say, 10,000 small businesses in the state, 1,000 small businesses in the state, and it was determined that one of them would incur costs that were beyond this threshold, do you think it would be appropriate for the entire process to be delayed for months and possibly rejected because of that one entity?
Mr. Hickey?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, I'm having trouble with that particular hypothetical because I couldn't see where just one. But, I mean, maybe the larger point is maybe you find out that the negative impact isn't what some people say it is, and the legislature approves the rule. That certainly could happen. I can see that happening. We don't know. We haven't done it yet. But, I mean, I could foresee possibly any possible outcome, rules being approved, rules being modified, rules being rejected. There's going to be a little delay there, but I don't think too long. I think from the interim to the next session, but possibly a two-session delay on it. But slowing down, slowing down has to happen sometimes. I have a hard time accepting the hypothetical where just one, though, one out of thousands or something would be affected only.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Hickey, that's what the bill says. It says any person or entity. It doesn't say a substantial number. It just says any, which would be quite possibly just one. There are any number of businesses that are that have a number of relatively small practitioners, and the field is dominated by perhaps only one. And to pursue that a little bit further, I guess for Representative Westrom. Representative Westrom, would you anticipate in this process of review, are you thinking that the result would be, if the legislature didn't simply approve the rules as they were proposed, that rather than just say go back to the drawing board, that the legislature would make an exception for only the affected parties?
Representative Westrom.
Representative Hilty, good question, good point. Two answers to that question. First of all, if you're that one entity that's being affected, they have feelings too, and they have bottom lines to meet, and so I would expect they, in their loneliness as being the only one that's being hammered with that expensive of a regulation, if they're the only one, so they would appreciate some sort of legislative review or oversight. But I think it would be a little stretch to think it would only affect one out of 1,000 of the similar type of entities. But more to the point, also, as I understand in the review in this bill, it would also allow the administrative law judge, and I'm going to ask Mr. Gehring for affirmation of this, because it's been just a bit since I read it, but I understand that the way it's structured, the law judge could enforce or let go some of the rules that aren't going to cost that much, and only hold up those that are more expensive. And Mr. Gehring, can you verify that for me, or am I crossing that with another bill that I recently?
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, the bill does allow the administrative law judge to review and approve or disapprove agency determinations of cost. So presumably if the agency said that a rule would cost more than $10,000 and the judge disagrees with that, he could overturn the requirement that the legislature approve the rule.
So,
Representative Westrom.
So, Mr. Representative Hilty, if that's a major concern, I guess it would probably become evident to us fairly quickly. I guess I've said enough.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Westrom, I think to the point about the administrative law judge, I would guess that the reason that provision is in this bill is that what's anticipated is exactly the opposite situation, in which an agency would determine that the cost of implementing the rules did not reach that threshold, and the reason for the review would be your anticipation that, in fact, an administrative law judge would say, no, that's wrong. But that's just my speculation.
You're cynical, Representative.
Okay, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I have two questions, one for Representative Westrom. Representative Westrom, can you provide an example of one of the, I'm presuming there are multiple, businesses who are ensnared under the current language, who would not be ensnared under the change, dropping it to dropping it from 25,000 to 10, and what's the problem they were trying to solve that hampered them because of this legislation and regulation?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, can you repeat the question, or
sure, I'll rephrase it
a little bit further.
I have a handicap, and it's talking like a lawyer, which I'll try to solve. There are some businesses, I'm presuming, that were hurt by the fact that the law is written the way it is with the current threshold. We're changing the threshold in the law to make it easier for businesses. Is that correct?
Representative West.
You're referring to the current law, Representative Lesch, of $25,000 for some entities that can ask for an exemption or under the current law?
Yes, Representative Westrom.
Well, this we're repealing that. That was a watered-down version passed a couple years later with more exemptions in it, and one including the governor could exempt the agencies from the process. Also a $25,000 threshold, which is a much higher threshold. So I think to your question, there's obviously entities that would be affected now under this bill that wouldn't be helped or benefited under the current law that has established for the selected entities, small businesses and small cities, or cities primarily are the two entities that qualify for them under the current law, but that's a $25,000 threshold. So whatever the regulations are that cost in between $10,000 and $25,000 would be not covered under current law, but would be under this law.
And Representative Lesch?
Thank you, Representative, for explaining that. Who are they? Who are those people who are currently affected who would not be affected? In short, who are you helping by passing this bill? Which is specifically?
We're Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, we're expanding it to help basically every citizen or entity in the state of Minnesota, whether that's your city or my city or your county, my county, your hair salon, my hair salon, your plumber, my plumber. I mean, just Joe Smith or Jane Doe that might have an individual rule promulgated, whether it's land use or something else, that all of a sudden costs them a lot of money as a, let's say, a farmer to implement some new regulations that are written. They would all be cast under the entity at this point.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Lesch,
thank you, Representative Westrom. I understand that what I'm trying to get is maybe I can put it this way. Mr. Hickey, were the NFIB folks just sitting around having beers one night and throwing a dart at the board saying, nah, 10 grand looks good? If maybe there really is no real problem you're trying to solve other than, as Representative Westrom cited, people who might have a problem. And if that's the case, fine, that kind of stuff goes through here once in a while. But I was presuming that this bill was crafted in order to address a specific problem other than a potential problem or a hypothetical problem.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom, and Representative Lesch, I'd remind you that the bill was passed in the past and by an earlier legislature, but so it wasn't. I wouldn't think that there would have been a scenario like that. But Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, that's what I was going to reaffirm. Mr. Hickey didn't, to my knowledge, wasn't sitting around with a group of NFIB folks having a beer. I redrafted this from discussing it with some other people and some former legislators and. Just in the idea of good government, and it was a good idea then, and it still is a good idea. And we as a legislature, I think it's incumbent upon us to rein in some of the authority we delegate, I think, at times too loosely. And so that's where the idea came from. The fact that this had been vetted through the legislature just 7 years ago and passed with such wide margins of votes, my sense was why deviate from something that's already made it through the process? Whether it's, some have said, well, 9,000 because it would cover certain things, or 8,000 instead of 10,000. This is already passed. I think it's a good model for what we should do, and it's in the spirit of good government and the idea of us as the legislators, with the election certificates, having more responsibility but also more ability to affect the outcome of rules and new regulations that do burden your citizens and mine.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hickey had a comment related to that question as well.
Don't lower his pay grade.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesch, we don't really have an example in mind. It's everything going forward. You know, as you know better than anybody, as a practitioner, there's about 10 volumes of this up there in the library. I believe there's 10 booklets, and there's thousands upon thousands of pages. You know, we're worried about what's next. A good example of what was next, if you just back up to 08, with the septic system rules, are going to cost a lot of people a lot of money. Maybe it's meritorious to incur all the cost. That's going to, you know, a place on people. Maybe it's not, but that's exactly the kind of thing that we would like to have, you know, this law in effect for, is the next expensive rules like septic system rules. Those are just 2 years ago, and actually from 08. And so we'd like to, you know, have this kind of law in place for the next one. So no one has a particular scenario or party in mind. The old law was really kind of a desperate attempt to throw something together after the governor vetoed it, and as you can see, it's a $25,000 seeking a variance. It was kind of a niche law. No one's used it once, I found out last year doing my research, and so this is going to have a much bigger impact.
Okay. Mr. Chair, if we could.
One last question.
Well, actually, it took me a while to get the one answer out of that one, Mr. Chair, so I had two brief questions for Mr. Gehrig, if I could, in light of the answers given to me by the testifiers. And I would just note, before I do that, that there were, I mean, this kind of backing into policy thing we did, for example, criminal law last year, when we just arbitrarily doubled the thresholds for theft and criminal damage to property, things like that. There was no real reason why we gave the number. Then doubling it seemed like a good thing to do because we passed the last bill in the early 80s. And I asked the questions at the same time, why this specific number. So that's why I was asking for it. And if I could, Mr. Chair, to Mr. Gehrig, is it still the case that the legislature can supersede any rule passed by an agency in Minnesota?
Mr. Gehrig.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, yes.
Okay. Then my second
Representative
question,
Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, is in light of that, if we are changing, if a better policy is just to take those on directly, that the legislature has to address all of them over a certain threshold, instead of the ones that we specifically choose to individually overrule. For example, a farmer in Representative Westrum's district or something has a problem, we can go in and we can supersede that with a law. But if we're just going to do all of them now, is there a fiscal note for this bill that would assess the costs of transferring those duties, which now exist in agency part of government, or the executive branch, to the legislative branch, and taking on the staff that we have to take on here, so that Representative Mahoney's CA or LA now knows the specific requirements for the tensile strength of a nylon strap?
Mr. Gehrig.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, I don't believe there's a fiscal note on this bill.
Okay. Next, we've got Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Westrum, for bringing forward this very important legislation. I believe Representative Lesch asked, one of the questions that was asked was, who will this help? Well, I think this is going to help every Minnesotan, and it's going to help America as a whole, too, because what we're talking about here is a very large problem. It's a specific problem, though it might be difficult to define, because you're right, this is a perspective thing. I think our discussion might be missing a little bit of a larger, more important point here. The key here is that we are now going to automatically require legislative approval if an agency rule's cost exceeds the threshold, right? So we're kind of shifting the burden. By requiring that legislative approval, we're making sure we're putting up a roadblock to delegations of legislative authority to agencies that may be unconstitutional or may just be not very prudent. As everyone knows, there's a very large problem in Minnesota, as Mr. Hickey pointed out, 10 large volumes of administrative rules that are very complicated. We're on a path, I think, towards what's happening in the federal government in Washington, D.C., where you have a federal register that runs on and on and on for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pages, perhaps millions. And that, when you get to that point, you're talking about unconstitutional delegations of legislative authority. You're talking about things like the Dodd-Frank bill, which just basically gives carte blanche authority in a number of areas to regulators, and it creates uncertainty. So we're also talking about the rule of law. Same thing goes for the Federal Health Care Reform Act. But Minnesota, we can stop that here in Minnesota and be a model for good, accountable government by making sure that our agencies have a culture. We can inculcate a culture within the agency prospectively going forward that really seriously considers or gives more weight to the cost of the rulemaking they're doing. And that naturally will lead them, because agencies want to keep things within their purview, that will lead them, those agencies, whatever it is, to only pass rules that are above cost above the threshold that are absolutely necessary. That means more efficient rulemaking. It means fewer rules, better rules, and more authority and power for the people's representatives. So I just, that's a comment, and if you have any reactions, I'd love to hear them, Representative and Mr. Biggie.
Representative Westrom.
No, Mr. Chair, I don't have any response. I appreciate your comments. And if there's other testifiers, we can certainly get to them, Mr.
We've got two more questions, Representative Westrom, and then we can move on to the next testifier. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hickey, you had mentioned, as some of your specific examples, a lot of different rules that have been promulgated. And I think what Representative Hilty was asking was about specific situations where people were burdened by rules. So I have a couple questions about the rulemaking situations you mentioned. That one of them was the stormwater rules. And so is it your contention that they're not promulgated correctly, they're not tailored narrowly to solve the problem of stormwater runoff pollution?
Mr. Hickey?
Representative Hortman. I didn't find a party. I didn't have time to find a party to talk about the ins and outs of trying to comply with that. This one from someone with a lot of knowledge of that rule thought it had potential to be very expensive for people. And to anybody in business today, expensive means burdensome.
Representative Portman, a follow-up?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. What I think we're not actually talking about here is whether the rules that are promulgated need to be promulgated to accomplish the purposes that they're that we've enacted a statute for them to adopt rules under. For example, the Clean Water Act of the federal law requires Minnesota to adopt regulations to be in compliance. If we're not in compliance, then there's a whole other set of problems that happen that could be far more expensive, particularly in the Clean Air Act situation. If we take away the PCA's ability to adopt Clean Air Act rules and we get out of compliance with the Federal Clean Air Act, then there's a whole bunch of mandatory things that start to happen where, you know, we can all bring our cars back to the vehicle emission check stations and all sorts of expensive, unpleasant things that we probably can avoid if we have rulemaking that reduces the air pollution in more cost-effective ways. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is that it matters what we are trying to accomplish with the rules and whether they're drafted in a way that accomplishes that purpose. And I guess my question about the author and Mr. Hickey is, you really think that the legislature is better equipped to determine the stormwater regulations that will best prevent pollution and cause the least amount of cost for businesses than the rulemaking process, which has huge opportunities for people to weigh in and participate and be part of? And then the further question is, do you really think that if there's proposed rules out there that don't cut pollution and just cost people money, that the legislature won't take action?
Mr. Hickey, before you go, I would expect, Representative Hortman, that there would be some kind of an information period that all of the findings in the rulemaking process would probably be there, I would expect. Be interested to hear from Mr. Hickey and Representative Westrom to inform the legislature as they go through that decision-making. But Mr. Hickey.
Well, thanks. Representative Portman, there's an opportunity for people to get involved through the administrative rules process. How many people do? I mean, not enough, clearly. We've tried to alert people. I'm sure every group that's here today has tried to at one point engage their members, but not enough people get involved. I would say overall, probably not enough information is shared. Maybe sometimes it works great. But overall, I don't think it's a process that probably gets as many people involved. Hence, we have this bill, a chance to kind of petition the legislature in general through this law to see if possibly some relief could be granted, maybe a more economical way to do something could be done. But we've never done this before. We'd have to see what the experience is. I suspect you'd bring experts in to testify in front of the proper committee. You guys would have to make judgments about do we want to go with the determinations that were made here, or possibly is there another way to do it that might be more economical? But I think it obviously, on very technical, complicated, scientific things, you'd have to look to the people who put the rule together. They'd come in and testify. You'd have to make your judgments. We'd have to see what the will of the legislature is. but I think more people are going to probably participate in the process. I feel fairly confident more people would probably participate in the process under Representative Westrom's bill than under the current process, because I don't think there's a lot of participation.
Representative Westrom, did you have anything?
Well, Mr. Chair, just to add to that, Representative Portman, I would agree. And you know, most people feel pretty threatened or overwhelmed by a rulemaking process. Most people wouldn't even know what NPRM means. And like, again, most people, until something actually affects you, you're busy with the rest of your life just keeping the kids getting up ready for school, keeping your business running, getting your job if you're working somewhere. And life is hectic enough without having to worry about what government agency might be affecting something a year or two down the road in your life. And so that's when I think most people become aware of the problem, at least in my experience. Once something's enacted that is negative, I get a lot more calls from people than something that's a year out prospective and they've heard about it. Sure, I get some calls, but when it really hits them because it's enacted, that's when it's reality. And once you've done that rulemaking process, that's when it becomes reality of this is what it's really going to cost. Just kind of back to your question or in Representative Mahoney's point as well about, you know, the legislature, and we don't have the expertise in this. Let me just remind us all, we're the ones that are expert enough to put the law in place to require the agencies to do something in the first place. All I'm saying is we're expert enough and smart enough to also then review whether the outcome of the rulemaking process matches what our intent was when we put the original organic statute in place that even gave the agency the power. Without that organic statute, the agencies don't have the right to make rules and impose burdens on our citizens. We're the ones that delegate that power in the beginning, and I'm just saying let's have a review process to double-check what we're delegating.
Okay, members, our last question on this thread.
Mr. Chair, I've
follow up
question.
Real quick, Representative Hartman.
Right. I don't want to delay a bunch of people testifying who've maybe traveled here to testify on this bill, but I think there's a lot more discussion we need to have on it. And I think if what we're going to propose to do in this legislation and vote on it today is to change the approval process for the rulemaking, that we should have a basic understanding of the way the rulemaking process operates today. What are the notice provisions that people have? How do they find out about it? How many opportunities do they have to weigh in? When a final proposed rule is put out, how long before it becomes effective? Because I think what we would find is that what we're doing here is legislating based on generalized statements of the fact that regulations are burdensome without any actual evidence or situations to back that up. So I think it would be kind of irresponsible of us to pass a bill that changes rulemaking quite a bit without having a pretty clear understanding of what the existing process is. And I hope that all members have taken a look at the Governor Pawlenty letter of May 27, 2003, vetoing this identical legislation, because what he basically says is that this makes rulemaking stop. For the most part, it puts all those details back in the hands of the legislature, which is really a terribly inefficient way to do things. I don't think any member of the legislature would say that we're fast or that we're particularly good at making detailed determinations of a scientific basis. I always tell people the difference between being a lawyer and being a legislator is we have rules of evidence in the court. In the legislature, it doesn't have to actually be true for you to say it. And I think it's probably best that these detailed decisions about what kind of drain tile you have or what kind of stormwater runoff you have is made in a forum where scientists and fact finders carry the day.
Okay, Representative Simon.
Thank you. First, a comment, and without questioning the motives of the author or anyone here at this table or in this legislature, I have heard comments about this bill placed in sort of a partisan context, and I always have to snicker a little bit when I hear about people talking about how burdensome the regulatory framework is when, in a partisan context, when they talk about that, when Democrats haven't run this state in 20 years. So for the last 20 years, it's been two Republicans and an independent running the executive branch, not Democrats. If the worry is that with a Democrat in office, suddenly you got to put the brakes on rulemaking, it seems to me that the way to do that is to put the brakes on rulemaking and not delegate the power and not delegate the authority to the executive branch if people are really worried about that. And then in the statutes that we pass, make sure that that's the case, that there just isn't that authority. But I want to ask a question to either of you about the money. So just going from $25,000 to $10,000, can you tell us a little bit about why you came up with that number, not so much the precision of why 10 and not 11 or 12, but why that drastic a change? It seems to me, and I've dealt before with statutory changes that change dollar amounts, inflation is your friend in the sense that any time you put a dollar amount in statute, as the years go by, more and more and more will fall within that that boundary. So if you leave it at $25,000, in 10 years, a lot more is going to come under $25,000. $10,000 is the kind of thing where I can see if we leave that in statute, you know, like I say, inflation's your friend if you're trying to do this. In 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, almost everything, almost every rule will have at least a $10,000 impact, I would think. In, you know, $20, $30, let's say, $10,000 might not be all that much money. And so can you just discuss a little bit why $10,000, and are you worried that over time and not that much time, basically everything will be covered under this rule? Or is that the intention?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, to kind of repeat my earlier answer, this is the identical language that passed bipartisanly, overwhelmingly, in the House of Representatives and in the Senate. And so rather than put 12,000 or some other number, my instinct was take something that's already been vetted, widely approved by Democrats and Republicans, and it only seems to be here that it is becoming a partisan issue of who's trying to defend agencies and who isn't. And that isn't what I'm trying to accomplish. I just thought it was a good government bill then, and once you start changing what passed in 2003, You have more explaining and having to add more rationale of why you should change that number. Good question. That's what we came up with in 2003, and it still is a lot of money in today's standards. In fact, it's probably more today than in 2003.
Okay, Representative Simon. Before you go, Representative Simon, I do have the breakdown from the votes in 2003, and there's at least five from this committee that voted, one of which voted no, and the remaining voted in affirmative. So, Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's a fair answer. I appreciate that you want to be consistent with 2003, and that makes sense to me. Let me just ask about a hypothetical. It may seem strange, but I can see where deregulation, stripping regulations, might actually have a cost as well, both in general and specifically. So to use Representative Mahoney's example, what if a rule were promulgated that got rid of the harness requirement? Would the manufacturer of the harness in Minnesota say, hey, wait a minute, I had this rule that forced people to buy my product. I'm going to lose a ton of business. I'm going to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars because people don't have to buy my harness anymore. I mean it as a serious question. Would that come under the purview of this rule where even deregulation has cost to an individual or to a business?
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, it's a bit of an awkward thought to get your mind wrapped around, but if it would have that kind of a cost on businesses, I would say, yeah, it would come back for review. I also then would say we as elected representatives, I would be quite confident we would ratify the rule and say it makes sense to to have the workplace harnesses 25 pounds lighter than what they were under the old idea. And I'm well aware of agencies that have a bit of a good old boy system and only allow certain products in, and we eventually flush that out. And if that's the case, then we'd be up for reviewing all of it. I also expect we'd ratify a lot of it, but then we have a review process put in place. Right now, they kind of go off into the rulemaking land, and you know, none of us keep up on every rule that goes through, and it also gets to be at times an easy cop-out for elected officials to say, well, that was the agencies that got it wrong. We didn't intend it to go that way, and now they've got it costing that much, and we didn't intend that 5 years ago when the rule went into effect. But so again, like I said earlier, we're trying to rein in some legislative authority here, which we probably shouldn't be delegating so much in the first place.
Okay, thank you, representatives, and Mr. Hickey, and we will hear from our next testifier, Mr. Larson. Mr. Larson, your name and affiliation, please, for the record, and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Larson, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 25 counties that operate as a caucus within the Association of Minnesota Counties with a Rural Perspective. So I want to thank you for allowing me to come here today, and thank Representative Western for bringing this bill forward, which the MRCC supports the motives behind House File 203, and believes the bill in its current form provides a good start to some of the ongoing concerns my organization has in addressing costly, unfunded state mandates. This is a critical time for counties. It's a critical time for governments of all sizes, in that we're learning ways to redirect the services that we provide with less funding in different ways than we've done before in the past, redesigning the way we do things, streamlining our services, and we believe that this is an opportunity for the state to do the same. So might be a good time. I've got a couple of prepared statements. I'm sure it sounds like there's going to be a couple of questions, but this might be a good time to echo a comment one of my members made last year when addressing unfunded mandates, rules, and regulations that the state imposes on increasingly cash-strapped counties. He said, tell them, please, to just leave us alone for a little while. Let us adjust to the cuts that are coming our way. Let us adjust to the regulations that are, the cuts we're taking and the regulations that are coming our way much too fast, it seems. So I'm going to address my comments to one issue in particular, and it does involve the subsurface sewage treatment system, the SST issue that was brought up in previous discussions, Minnesota Septic Rule 7080 to 7083, and issues generated a great deal of anxiety within our organization. So some of the counties in the state have already adopted this rule, we're not going to be proposing to go back and open or revisit the rule, only to take the point that this legislation would have been helpful to the process that sought to fix a problem our members did not agree existed, or that it did not exist to the extent necessary to impose costly, statewide, one-size-fits-all rules, and a blanket rule change. We do, however, have a recommendation and think that that we think will improve the bill, and I'll address that in a moment. But for those of you that are new to the issue, a major overhaul occurred on the septic rules in 2008, which raised the bar for the septic system industry, substantially altering how systems are designed, reviewed, constructed, inspected, and maintained, as well as changing the standards for contractor licensing, system maintenance, and reporting on tracking requirements. Our environmental professionals have testified to the fact that without any additional funding to the LGU, these rules will double the septic workload for counties for permitting, tracking, and inspecting septic systems, which in turn will greatly increase the cost of permits and professional services encountered by your constituents. In addition, the cost of septic system components and design installation will increase greatly. So the SST rules have caused a significant amount of concern at the county level across the state. To date, I think it's about a third of the counties have adopted the rule. Our membership views this process as a classic case of the state of a state idea imposed at the county level with no funding to follow or address the significant additional cost either to the county or the citizens. So in concluding, as stated, we support the bill as a good first step, but concerned that it does not deal with the annual or ongoing expenses only the first year after enactment. So that's a concern to us, and we would suggest that that would limit the effectiveness of the legislation and the intent of the bill, and we would prefer that HF 203 be changed from a one-year after enactment threshold to an annual threshold. We believe that there's ways that agencies, that rules could be promulgated that would put ongoing costs in place that would defeat, I think, the intent of the bill. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, I'll take questions. Thank you again.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. I particularly, Mr. Larson, appreciate your comments as a member last year of the House Environment Committee. Did hear from many of the solid waste managers from multiple counties, and they did iterate those very same concerns that you had about the SSTS systems. And I remember the testimony explicitly saying what we have now is working, and we are working to implement what we have now, and they were just overwhelmed. But Representative Gruenhagen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, and Mr. Larson. You know, as a freshman, and again, I'm not an expert in this area, but I did do quite a bit of campaigning, and this issue with the septic tanks came up pretty regular. And, you know, one of the things I would just say is that one of the reasons I support this bill also is I think there's a tendency for government to overregulate. And this gives a little bit of a check and balance between unelected agency heads and their departments and elected representatives. And ultimately, people hold elected representatives responsible for, you know, what happens out there in the state of Minnesota. Secondly, I think cost of business or the cost of operating business and even our families is becoming a critical issue in terms of competitiveness, not only within our country, you know, the 50 states, but also globally. And if we're generating volume of regulations and they all have a dollar cost, ultimately that's going to show up somewhere in terms of our competitiveness. Now, we all want a clean environment, and there's, you know, there's a balance there, and I understand that. The second thing is, I happen to know a person who was a former administrative judge and law judge, and I talked to him about this to get his perspective, and he said there's a tremendous amount of abuse, this was his perspective, by the agencies on individuals and families in this state. So his perspective, having been an administrative law judge, was that the abuse was on the side of the agency and an over-regulatory system that is hurting our competitiveness and the cost to our businesses and families. This was in a subtle way confirmed during my campaign on this septic tank issue. It seemed in our area, the county was coming out in cooperation with the state and telling people to, or mandating they put in a new septic tank. Well, people who actually work with septic tanks, I talked to several of them, I said, isn't there a cheaper solution? Well, they said, really, the amount of septic tanks that actually need to replace is a pretty small percentage. Most of the current septic tanks can be remedied by simply addressing the drain field, which is much lower cost than replacing the entire septic tank. Now, I'm not an expert. I'm just telling you the input that I've received out there. And I've received, you know, when I look at the input of the administrative law judge that I'm acquainted with, former, and also my constituents on this issue, I think there does need to be a check and balance there. And I think when we're generating volumes and volumes of regulations that have a cost in our businesses and ultimately cost us private sector jobs or the potential, and again, I understand the balance, I think there is that need for that. And I don't see that we're going to micromanage every scientific detail. But to bring the agencies in front of our committee, in front of elected representatives, for a certain level of justification for these costs, I think is critical to today's economic environment. Do you have any comments on that, either Representative Westrom or Mr. Larson?
Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, I don't. I think you've stated it well, Representative Gruenhagen.
Mr. Larson?
Do you agree with everything I said, Mr. Larson? No. Just kidding.
Mr. Larson, did you have any response to that? Otherwise, any?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I just think it echoes what county environmental and county commissioners have been saying across the state. It's this is a problem that was attempting to attach a fix to a problem that didn't exist in their minds.
Okay, one last question, Representative
Just Grunheim. A follow-up comment is, you know, and I would simply reiterate the same thing other than the examples I've given. In talking to city council people, county commissioners, it's the same message throughout that we've talked about here on the reason for this bill, justification for this bill. And to me, when you look at all those different levels of elected officials and people involved in the system, and they're all saying the same thing, I think there does need to be, I'm not saying that there isn't, you know, some balance there, but I think this bill brings a certain amount of transparency and accountability to the agency system, which I believe is needed.
Members, any other questions? Otherwise, we are ready to move on. Mr. Larson, thank you. To those in the audience, is there anyone else who would like to testify in favor or against this bill? Please step forward if you would. Okay, anybody whatsoever? Seeing none, Representative Westrom, would you like to renew your motion?
I would, Mr. Chair, and renew the motion to pass this bill and refer it to the Government Operations Committee.
The motion has been made to that the bill pass and be referred to the Government Operations Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. The bill is passed and referred to the Government Operations Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, any announcements before we move on? Seeing none, we will meet again on Wednesday at 12:30. Thank you for your participation today. Meeting's adjourned.